That team sure did suck last night. They just plain sucked. I've seen teams suck before, but they were the suckiest bunch of sucks that ever sucked.
Steve Rosenbloom.
There was a keg stand I lost to an 81-year-old lady. She got off the ninth floor, but it was really close.
Mark Grody.
I've been waiting to get a hold of this guy for years. Channel 2 News is out there interviewing people. Yeah, I've been talking to my wife about getting Steve. He once connected my dots and boarded my plane. I'm going to dunk his ass.
They suck, so you don't have to.
Can't you morons do anything right?
Founding members of the WB Club.
Smoke weed every day.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote.
Stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
I apologize. What is your name? I don't know who you are, the host.
I'm Steve Rosenbloom. This is Saturday's Suckage. Let's take roll to see who else is here. Grobber.
It sucks, and it freebases.
Don Cooper.
If I think something sucks, I'll tell you it sucks.
Jake Garrietta.
This sucks. Really, it does.
Albert Almora.
Damn, Willie, man, like, do we suck?
Eloy Jimenez.
Hey, you guys not gonna make anyway. You guys suck. And when I got traded the next day, oh, welcome to the Sock team.
I believe Eloy got hurt just saying that. Toby!
Oh, my God, this sucks!
Random Bears fan.
And the brother we suck!
Cable!
Finally made a list of somebody who thinks he sucks besides I do.
Liam Hendrick!
I wouldn't say seeking perfection, it's just mainly trying not to suck.
Julie Swiker!
Man, that sucks.
Wilson Contreras.
Losing suck. I'll tell you that, and that's all I can say.
George Wentz.
We had fun, but there you go. I sucked.
Garth Algar.
Turn it off, man! Turn it off! It's sucking my will to live!
Steve Dahl.
Disco sucks! Disco sucks!
Candace Parker.
It sucks.
Roquan Smith.
Yeah, man. Sucks.
Zach LaVine.
It sucked to have it happen game one.
DeMar DeRozan.
You know, it just sucks.
Justin Fields coach Mike Tomlin.
It all sucks. There's not degrees of suck. It all sucks.
Josh Allen.
Sucks. Losing sucks. Sucks.
Bob Costas.
I also don't understand, or maybe I should just applaud you, for having the self-confidence to label your own show Saturday Suckage.
Robbie Triano.
Hello, Chicago. I'm back and I suck.
Yes, you do. Look at that. The roll call. That's the legendary and iconic roll call. Welcome to Saturday Suckage. We suck so you don't have to. We're broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealer. Phone number here at the Score, 312-644-6767. That'll get you to our listener line powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That number, 312-644-6767, also gets you to the Score's text line. So just before we came on the air today, the news broke. Former Bulls coach, former Score basketball expert, among a million other things, Doug Collins has been named to the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. We're trying to reach Doug. We have calls out. We're trying to get him on the show sometime today. And I have to say this, because I was going down, I said, well, I want to get this in order, and it's head spinning what Doug's done. I was today years old when I found out that Doug grew up downstate in the house next to the Malkovich kid. Yes, that guy. Doug's neighbor was Teddy KGB. Pay that man his money. All right, but first, the Bears are on the clock. That's what I've heard. We're working to confirm that rumor. We're working to confirm that rumor with a man who does a show called On the Clock, and he does it on the score. He does the daily score and the daily On the Clock, the weekly On the Clock, daily score, and he used to be on this show. It is his show, but he's not on the show, but he will be on the show as soon as we can reach Mark Grody. In the meantime, we have a packed show. Let me run this down for you. Mark Grody will talk about the five storylines, best five storylines of the Bears during the NFL draft. They're not all quarterback related. Steve Phillips, we hear at 11:25, former Mets GM. He's hosted the leadoff spot on Sirius XM MLB Radio, MLB Network, and he used to be a regular on Saturday edition of The Score. At noon, Chris Showpony Childers will be here. He's the host of Full Ride with Rick Neuheisel. Men's and Women's Final Four, Caleb Williams, and Drake May. He's down there in Drake May country. So we'll talk NFL draft and college football with him. 1 o'clock, Casey Johnson, Bulls insider for NBC Sports Chicago. And UConn's going for a back-to-back title, which will be the first time since 2006-2007 Florida Gators, coached by Billy Donovan. So there you go. I think Billy Donovan is far more interesting recalling the back-to-back championships than he is as coach of the bipolar Bulls. At 1 o'clock, Danny Parkins will be here. Usually he's the one introducing guests. I'm going to be introducing Danny Parkins, host of Parkins and Spiegel Show, co-host. And that's right here on The Score. And he is author of Pipeline to the Pros, a book about how Division III small college nobodies rose to rule the NBA. Book is due out on April 16th. Portion of every sale of a book goes to brain cancer research. That is our pack lineup. We're still trying to get Doug Collins. In the meantime, Mark Grody is now on the clock. Oh, hi, Mark. Robbie? Do we have Mark? Robbie? Do we have Mark? Mark, anyone?
Oh, hi, Steve.
Oh, my goodness.
There, I just heard the little ding.
Okay, that's good.
I saw
radio.
Yeah, Robbie sucks, and that's why
this all sucks. This is a sucky start to my day.
Oh, well, thank you. I'll take that personally then, because I don't have enough internal guilt, and I've not left enough internal scars emotionally. So thank you for adding to that. So the idea is it's all about the quarterback, but it's not just about the quarterback. So Robbie wanted to have you sort of, when we used to do What Mark Heard, now it's What Mark Thinks, about the five best storylines, five top storylines, five things to watch with the draft coming up on the 27th, the first round, and the Bears have two picks right now in the top nine. So maybe we start there. Will they keep both picks in the top nine? What are your five top storylines? Let's go in whatever order you want, Mark.
Yeah, you know, we could start there, as a matter of fact. Yeah, these won't be in any necessarily order of importance.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, right now, the Bears have four picks in this draft. And while from a reporter's standpoint, that'd be a nice, easy draft to cover. But I think that, you know, you'd like to see Ryan Poles come up with a way to multiply those picks. And, you know, you have to look at number nine. It's really like number nine is fascinating to me because there are so many different possibilities and players that might land with the Bears. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that one of those wide receivers, Neighbors or Adunze, could be there. I think definitely one of the offensive linemen, because it's a pretty deep offensive lineman draft, could be there at nine as well. It's just a matter of, and this is something that, you know, only Ryan Poles is going to know, the feel of whether or not he can get some of these guys if he decides to trade down. So, yeah, that's definitely number one. How will Ryan Poles go about the draft? You know, he like most GMs when he came in, talked about wanting to build a team through the draft. Duh. That's the best way to do things in the NFL. Right now, You don't have a sturdy draft. However, you have done enough good things in the offseason to counter that. And when I say you've done enough good things in the offseason to counter that, I'm talking about the acquisition of Keenan Allen. So we'll go with that as number one. I think number two for me, what are the Bears thinking about? Let's just generalize it. What are they thinking about their offense right now? How complete do they think it is? Where does the urgency remain for the Bears? And I think that just because Keenan Allen is here, that by no means does that mean that they are going to stay away from grabbing another wide receiver in this draft. And so number two is wide receivers. And just the 2A to that, the wide receiver group in college here that's coming into this draft, it's really starting to change in terms of Marvin Harrison Jr. used to be the number one with a bullet, and he still could be. I still think he could go to the Arizona Cardinals early in this draft. But Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, I've talked to so many different draft experts on the air and off the air, and it's hilarious because some love Roma Dunze best, Malik Nabers best, or even still Marvin Harrison. Actually, we don't even hear Marvin Harrison Jr.'s name as much. And then you've got Brian Thomas Jr. and Keon Coleman out of Florida State. Brian Thomas Jr., the kid out of LSU. Some people really love those guys. So wide receiver number two. And then defense as well. I think in the first round, the Bears should continue with offense, whether it's a big guy or a fast guy. As tempting as it would be to take somebody to pair with Montez Sweat, you know, and which I wouldn't be mad if they went and got Dallas Turner or Jared Verse or even Laiatu Latu or good old Chop Robinson if they traded down. But as I've been saying, and you know, it kind of pains me to say this, but the Bears defense is good. They're good. So I think that you need to pour onto the offense, and you can make the defense better as time goes on. You don't have to make that splash right this instant. Number four, the offensive line, Steve, is so interesting on the Bears right now because we know how almost stubborn Ryan Poles has been towards Braxton Jones. But there's no way that Ryan Poles wouldn't or shouldn't consider offensive line at that number nine spot if they stay there or if they trade down and somebody like Joe Alt is available or Olu Fashanu to take over that left tackle spot and have Braxton Jones be your backup and a depth piece. Because Ryan Poles, as you can see throughout this offseason, has done that with his offensive line, having built some depth, built some starters with Coleman Shelton, of course, Ryan Bates. So if you get another offensive lineman, you're really doing your quarterback a favor right there. And then I would say the last thing right now, and these are just top five things off the top of my head, I would say, meaning that there's probably more things we can get into, Steve, but what's the philosophy going into this draft? Is Ryan, in my first mock draft, I think I've talked about this with you, I had the Bears trading down with the Raiders to 13, and then at 13, the Bears taking Brock Bowers, the tight end, which would be a best player available move. What's Ryan Poles thinking? Does he have his eyes on somebody? And we would know that if he was to move up in the draft. Or is he, you know, thinking, I'm going to take the best possible player available? And to me, in a lot of ways, that would be Brock Bowers if he was to, you know, Nabers and Adunze and obviously Marvin Harrison Jr. are taken off the board. So there's my fast five for you, Steve, and what I'm thinking right now ahead of the draft.
Mark Grody is my guest. He's joining me on the guest hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. And in running that down, I come back to the idea that I don't care who's there at nine. I don't care what you're offered. I know you can be, a lot of guys want to be really slick and widen their draft haul and all this. If this is a top-heavy draft and you're guaranteed two top-heavy positions in that draft, take the bluest player available. They don't need players as much as they need more talent. They have a huge hole on either opposite Montez Sweat or a three technique. I've become a believer in Jervon Dexter. I think he had, you compare him to Jalen Carter in the last eight games each of them played. Dexter was better in certain situations and certain statistics, and he had more sacks. And I think that he came on at the end. He's certainly not the line wrecker that you want there. But I think you take the bluest player available because you need more top-end talent. And you said it was Brock Bowers. You looked at that at 13. I don't know who you'd have, who the Bears have at 9. How many blue players the Bears have? Have you heard any idea how many blue players the Bears have identified?
I have not heard, Steve, specifically how many blue players that they have identified, but it seems pretty obvious to me that we've hit it. I mean, and everybody has. Not like we cracked the code here. The Bears, I would be shocked if the Bears were not to somewhere in the first round, they trade down or trade up, take an offensive lineman, take a wide receiver. As Randy Mueller, the former GM of the New Orleans Saints, told me on the air on the clock, a big guy or a fast guy. That's what you go with. Okay. So he actually shot down my idea of Brock Bowers. He did not like that. He said, he generalized it and basically said, you don't take a tight end in the first round. Obviously, I disagreed, but I'm listening to Randy Mueller because he was a damn GM and he was the GM of the year in the year 2000. But I would imagine that they've identified a ton of guys, blue chip guys at that spot, because there's nothing wrong with that. Like, we talk so much about multiplying these picks. You got to get more picks. But if you can get, you're going to probably draft Caleb Williams, and presumably he's going to be good. And then if you can hit on somebody at number 9, just staying at plain old number 9 and not trading down and get another starter impact player, that'd be huge. And obviously you're not going to get great things with your third pick and fourth pick, as in you're not going to get elite, but you might get, it's still possible you could get starters out of that. But yeah, I don't know how many guys that they've actually identified, but I'm imagining, and it sounds like, Ryan Poles is pretty good at allowing for, almost forcing debate on these sorts of topics. So I'm sure each guy that's in that draft room will have 3 or 4 players that they like at that number 9 spot or somewhere in the first round.
Mark Grody is my guest. He hosts the Score Show, a weekly Score Show on the clock. He hosts the Daily Score Show called, imagine that, the Daily Score. And he's Mark
Grody. You're doing great, man.
He's
right. You're doing great.
He's right here. So on the clock, you've had a variety of people on, which has been wonderful for discussion, content, educating Bears fans. Here's the way different people look at it. The idea that Marvin Harrison Jr. is not the top wide receiver in this is simply a function of what happens between the end of the regular season, of the end of college football season, and everybody getting antsy about writing the same thing during the draft. It always happens with a couple of these people. Marvin Harrison Jr. and J.J. McCarthy, for instance. They're the guys who get, they fly up because they fly up, because we're desperate for something different to read or write. I can't imagine he's going to fall in the draft, because what you saw on tape is still what you saw on tape. The people you've talked to, do they believe the tape? Do they believe, assuming the medical is complete, do they believe the tape? Or did he believe anything else? Which have they come down on in identifying where the real talent is?
Yeah, I love that question. It's the tape. It definitely comes down to the tape. And, it sucks he hasn't worked out, that he pulled a last-second Houdini act on us out at the NFL Combine. Mm-hmm. I was among the reporters waiting for him to talk. I talked to a guy on my show last night who absolutely, so I asked them that exact same question. I'm like, what the heck is going on here? Why are people all of a sudden freaked out by, is it just the what's going on with not wanting to work out, or is it the tape? And he said, look, he says more about the tape. And what he was saying was, I should say that it's not like, and the guest that I'm talking about, so I'll be specific here, Emory Hunt, I had on last night, as a matter of fact. He's the owner of Football Game Plan, CBS Sports HQ, really knowledgeable guy. He just happens to like the tape of Malik Nabers best. There's a lot of guys, I think it was Brian Baldinger who I had on, fell in love with the tape of Roman Dunzan. I believe that Baldinger, I don't remember if he was before or after. I think he was before the combine. And these guys all still like Marvin Harrison Jr., but I just think that there's been a deeper dive on the tape by the guys and gals who actually dissect the tape. And, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., like, he's excellent still. I just feel like upon further review, the people have looked at it and maybe taken away the generational tag just relative to what some of these other wide receivers are doing. But I also agree with you. This does happen every year. And I would argue this is the time that it happens. I mean, after a while after the combine, everybody is reasonable and sane and everybody's sort of lockstep. And then everybody sprouts in different crazy directions because everybody has to do two or three mock drafts. We've all got to make it a little bit interesting. So I do think that that does occur where we get fatigued in talking about these guys. So people start to think about other guys. But to answer your question, because I just asked it last night, so I specifically asked that question, it's the tape.
Yes, that's good. I believe that. We're going to put this on tape because this was a sterling interview. Mark, thank you for your time. Have a great weekend.
You too, Stevie Sunshine. Talk to you later, buddy.
Thank you. Let me remind you, the draft coverage on The Score is presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com and the number one draft pick, Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Going to take a break. When we come back, former Mets GM Steve Phillips will be here. Scout Craig Counsell for us. And has he ever brought in a guy with a despicable reputation as Mike Clevenger? We'll ask him, both sides of town. Steve Rosenblum, Saturday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Everybody's standing at Wrigley. Cubs, one out away from their fifth consecutive win. The pitch, a swing and a line drive.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
A diving backhand catch by Bush at first. Cubs win the ball game. The former Dodger, Michael Bush, not only hits a home run, but for an encore, he makes a diving catch for the final out, and if he doesn't catch it, it almost certainly Ronnie would have tied this ball game.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Hall of Famer Pat Hughes calling the final out of yesterday's game. Cubs beat the Doyers. The Michael Bush game. That's what it is. The Michael Bush game. A home run, a diving stab. The Dodgers are not going to come back a 17th time against the Cubs. That's it. Michael Bush said no. By the way, let me remind you of this. This afternoon, the Cubs continue their series against the Dodgers at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 2:30 with Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer on the call for first pitch at 3:05. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. We're going to go to the guest hotline and welcome back to the show. He used to be a regular visitor to the show, the guest hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois, and he is Steve Phillips of the leadoff spot on XM Sirius XM, and he's here, former general manager of the Mets. He's here to talk some baseball. Steve, thanks for making time today. I appreciate it.
No, I'm happy to do it. Glad to be with you again.
So do me a favor. We're going back some. You've hired managers. You were responsible for managers. The Cubs said David Ross is not as good as Craig Counsell. The records also say that Craig Counsell was available. They brought in Craig Counsell. It was a bold move. It signaled a lot of different things. From your seat, scout Craig Counsell for me, his strengths and his weaknesses.
Yeah, I think I think the big thing about him is that he's does a great job of getting the most out of what he has, and he's outstanding at working matchups. He was always at his best when they used to allow expanded rosters in September, because he would mix and match, and he'd figure out every part of the personnel that he had and where in a game that they could fit to help them try to prevent a run or add a run, and really good at implementing his personnel in situations to be able to get the most out of them. And so, you know, I've always had great respect for that he gets more out of less all the time. And you know, I think that the one challenge has been that he's never been in a large market. He's never had huge expectations. And I think that's just, you know, not having the experience or the market that he's been in. And, you know, I give him credit for having the courage to take it, because the Cubs job is a big job. It's a different job than the Brewers job, where in Milwaukee, you know, there's not the sort of expectation to try to win all the time. They don't have the same sort of payroll. And so, you know, I think it's a bold move on his part. Obviously, he's getting paid handsomely to do it. But, you know, and they've created a roster there that, in my opinion, kind of suits his style, where they've got a lot of moving pieces, you know, between Madrigal and Morel and Bush and Cooper and you know, with what they've got with Bellinger, if Crow Armstrong comes up, and how they might piece it all together. And so I think he's the right fit for that team. I feel bad for David Ross, because I think he's a more than capable major league manager, and I hope he gets another opportunity. But Craig Counsell is a difference maker for sure.
My guest is Steve Phillips, host of Leadoff Spot, MLB's Sirius XM show, MLB Radio, and former Mets GM. And in we're putting together a roster for a manager, there are parts of it where Joe Maddon was famous for, well, okay, catcher, go play left field. Let's see how you do, and trying that kind of stuff out. And Craig Counsell seems to have an idea already. I don't know where he may put some of his players in unpredictable situations, but it all seems to be aimed at winning that day's game in that particular situation, managing the game in front of him. And yet some of it has to be an eye to the future. Is that a discussion a general manager has with a manager along the way? And what insight would you gain from what your manager says?
Yeah, I think what it is, it's just sharing opinions and conversations. It's not telling, you know, like I am not one of those that believes that the front office should tell a manager what to do. I never told my manager, Bobby Valentine or Art Howe, who to play, when to play them, how to go about doing it. I would ask questions. I would, you know, sort of play devil's advocate in a way that just to make sure that everything was being considered. I'd sit in a room with the coaches and say, well, what do you think about this? What did you think about this? Did you think about bunting in this situation? Did you think about hit and run in this situation? What did you do? You know, did you think about using this pitch or that pitch? Just sort of, you know, flushing out the thought process of it all, but leaving that up to the manager to make the decision, and understanding that sometimes managers have to go with their gut to be able to work their way through it. And, you know, the rub, you know, where general managers and managers sometimes don't get along, where there becomes some part of, you know, something uncomfortable, is that the manager wants to win today, and the general manager wants to win today, but he also wants to win tomorrow and next year and the year down the road. And sometimes those two things come in conflict, where, you know, managers oftentimes, you know, get to where they believe or feel that players are disposable. This guy's not working, get me a new guy. And as a general manager, your belief is, if this guy's not working, figure out when to use him and fix him. Get with the staff, get with the coaches. How can we make him better? What can we do to improve? What does he need to be able to get there? What do you need as a staff to be able to get the most out of him? Where a lot of times, you know, managers will say, just give me the next guy. I want the next guy, or that guy. And, you know, the other thing is, you know, you don't ever start the season
with your best 26 players on the roster that are in your organization. You just don't do it because you've got to prepare for what is a 162-game marathon in 187 days, and you need to maintain depth. And sometimes you keep a player who has limitations on his movement of being able to be sent to the minor leagues and optioned out, and he may not be as good as the guy you send to the minor leagues, but you've got to protect yourself that if there's injuries, you've got some depth. Because if you just cut loose the guy who's not quite as good, and you bring up the guy from the minor leagues, well, then what happens if somebody gets hurt? Where do you go with it? And so, you know, there is a bit of a juggling act, but it comes down to communication. And if the manager and general manager communicate properly, at least they can understand the challenges that each one faces. Acknowledging that and relating to it, I think you can get along in a pretty good way.
Steve Phillips, former Mets GM and part of Sirius XM's The Leadoff Spot, is my guest here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. So have you ever, the White Sox, because pitching is so important, depth is so important, the White Sox brought back Mike Clevenger. And he's largely, the reputation he has, largely despicable. It's very, it feels so dirty to see them do this again. Have you ever faced a situation? Did you ever do that as GM? Did you ever face a situation where I could bring this guy in? Maybe the locker room is, or the dressing room is good. The clubhouse would accept this, but the fan base might not. Ownership maybe is neutral, but this would not look, this would not be a fun thing to explain. Did you face that situation? What'd you do?
Yeah, not specifically. I got my second week on the job. As the GM, going from the assistant to the GM, we dealt with Carl Everett, who was on our team, and there were some issues with his kids and their stepmom, his wife, and you know the kids were taken away, and so we had to deal with that issue and trying to manage that when it was somebody within the organization who was a mandatory reporter that reported that there was something not quite right with the kids. And that there was the potential abuse going on. And so it did create a bad relationship with the player in the organization that I had to manage. And then, you know, I ended up trading him in the offseason. And there were a lot of teams that, and in the end, Carl Everett was not any part of the problem in that at all. But there were teams that just didn't want to get involved in it. There were other teams that were willing to in the right situation, but they had to run it by their owner. And so, you know, I think you always have to deal with those sorts of things, that if there's a reputation for somebody, you have to do your due diligence and make sure that you know, that this is something that can be managed and that it's somebody that can fit into the scheme and the comfort level. And ultimately, these are ownership decisions that, you know, as a general manager, you don't make a decision that affects the core values of the organization without the owner being involved in it. You never do that on your own. You've got to always run that up the flagpole with the owner, whether it's somebody you draft out of high school or college that's had some issues, whether it's somebody that's played for some other team has had issues of some sort or another. And I think that because in the end, as general managers and as managers and front office personnel, we come and go. The owner owns the team, and he needs to be the one who's willing to put his name on somebody. And you know, they take that seriously. And so whenever a player that has any reputation is brought in, it's been vetted by the owner as part of that process as well.
One of the things that has grown, changed, evolved are metrics, baseball analysis through numbers and decimal points. So we, as the media and the fans, would look at, well, Andrew Benintendi, you can look at any number and see that he sucks. This is the highest contract that the White Sox have ever, biggest contract they've ever given somebody. They've played seven games. He is a minus 0.7 WAR, which means he's 0.1 per game, minus 0.1. So we look at WAR because we can look at that. We don't look at the clubhouse or the discussions that general manager might have with the players. What do you gather that general managers and managers consider legitimate baselines of metrics? Is WAR important? Is it as accurate or a big a deal as we tend to make it in the media? Or which ones do you look at to gain a further insight?
Yeah, I think that, look, I think all of the numbers matter in some way, because all they do really is quantified performance. And so there's many different ways of looking at performance. There's not one sole way that I think you can evaluate players and value and talent on the team. And so a player may be a zero war player where he's not any different than a replacement for him. However, if he's got versatility that he can play in three or four different spots on the field, well, that has value to the manager in filling out the roster. And, you know, one of the things that teams have started to realize is that, I think Tampa Bay is really good at this and what they figured out. And the Dodgers were for a long time, too, before they've started paying for the impact, you know, seven war player, is that what the Rays particularly do is they never put a below level replacement value player in. So they never put a negative value player on the field. They don't ever have the most impactful player, but they also never put on the field somebody who's a below war average, you know, replacement player. And so, you know, they their goal is, we may not have the best overall player, but we're not going to put below replacement level players on the field. And if we're above average at every position, then we're going to be okay. We're going to be good enough. We're going to win enough games to be able to do that. So WAR is a good number. I think WAR credits defense in too significant a way for me that because I think that if you can't hit, but you're a great defender, you still can't really profile as an everyday player. Like, I look at Nick Madrigal, and, you know, the idea of him playing third base doesn't make sense to me because, you know, he doesn't have power and he doesn't have speed. Now, he can put the ball in play. He's a singles hitter. He's a solid defensive player. But to be a functional everyday player in a lineup, I look at a guy and think you've got to have some level of impact on offense, some power, speed. Now, you could be a replacement guy on a day and fill in at a position if you don't have that impact. But as an everyday player, I need some impact out of it. And if I don't get it from you in a position where it's called for, like first base, third base, left field, right field, then I better be getting more power or speed from second base, shortstop, and center field to make up for what you're not putting in the lineup. And so weighted runs created plus, OPS plus, ERA plus, you know, all of those are stadium standardized to where, you know, Coors Field isn't any different than Wrigley Field or Baltimore, Camden Yards, where they moved the left field wall back. Those all matter to me. So I think there's many numbers you can look at that really tell the story of a player. And I think you need to look at more than just one.
Steve Phillips, former Mets GM, is joining me on the Score. Before I let you go, Steve, one question about a season, an early season series like this, Cubs and Doyers, and the Dodgers are, the Doyers are everything they are going to in the World Series. The Cubs took game one of the World Series. And at times, that's what it feels like. From inside the baseball offices, inside the clubhouse, inside the dugout, it seems as though this were an opportunity against a team that's not the Rockies, but a team that is built to win, that if you're the Cubs manager, if you're the Cubs general manager, you might confirm certain suspicions, but you wouldn't go any farther than that on players, on situations, on bullpens, things like that. How did you used to look at these kind of series early on?
Yeah, I think that you know, when you're playing the better teams, it's always good to sort of gauge where you are in comparison to them. But it's a dangerous game to play. I ask that question a lot. Like, I go to Tampa Bay and I say, okay, how do you guys guard against playing the name game where, okay, they've got Judge and Soto and they've got Garrett Cole and they've got, you know, DJ LeMahieu and Anthony Rizzo, and you have Yandy Diaz and Curtis Mead, and you have, Junior Caminero and Jose Caballero. Like, those names aren't household names. How do you guard? We don't even think about it. We go, we play. We focus on the process. We go out there and play. We go out there and perform. We play whatever game's in front of us. We don't play that because we lose that name game, right? And so I do think, though, that teams take stock in themselves when they play those better rosters. And what's interesting, you know, those, like when I talked to the Orioles this year, I told them, you're not sneaking up on anybody anymore. Like, you guys now have a target on your back. And that's a different level of playing when you know that everywhere you go, the Dodgers, everywhere they go, they're going to get that other team's best shot. They're going to get their best performance because They've got a target on the back. They're the team to beat, and everybody wants to gauge where they are. And so I think it is important to understand that when you play those better teams, that, you know, where you stack up against them. But you also can't be controlled by that, because it gets you into trouble and makes you feel less about yourself. Because on any given day, the worst team in baseball can beat the best team in baseball, and everybody needs to remember that.
Steve, terrific insight. I really appreciate you taking time, as if you don't talk enough all week. But thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you very much for being on the show. That's Steve Phillips.
You got it. My pleasure.
Steve Phillips, former Mets GM, leadoff spot, co-host of the leadoff spot in Sirius XM Major League MLB Network. He's great. Great insight. Look, you agree, you disagree. Everybody disagrees with the general manager. Speaking of which, let's take a break. When we come back, Mike Clevenger passed the physical. Chris Getz failed the mental. I'm Steve Rosenblum, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
White Sox! White Sox! Go, go, White Sox!
It's Saturday Suckage on 670, The Score, in Odyssey Station.
How come all those places that stepped up to offer the Bears, like Waukegan and Aurora and Cicero, why don't they step up and offer the White Sox a place to go? Yeah, apparently they got money for stadiums. Yeah, here, take the White Sox. Please, we'll pay you. Mike Clevenger passed the physical. Chris Getz failed the mental. That's what I said before the break. Here's what I mean. The South Side gets more despicable. Sucking on the field isn't enough. Sucking in the front office and the chairman's suite isn't enough. Sucking in the public square, aha, by signing a guy accused of domestic and child abuse, apparently hits for the cycle when it comes to hating your fans and showing what frauds you all are. Chris Getz refused to call this high school roster a rebuild. So he's lying or stupid, take your pick. And now here's Getz on signing a guy that just makes you feel dirty talking about it. Quote, I've yet to meet anyone in Major League Baseball that is comfortable with their starting pitching and starting pitching depth. It's very early in the season. There's going to be to keep us in a position to compete throughout the year. I guess he said that with a straight face. Continue, quote, having the comfort level of having guys step up and fill innings at a high level that pushed us towards bringing in arms like Clev and Keller, others. Okay, nobody in baseball is happy with their depth. All right, I'll buy that. Yet nobody else in baseball signed this guy who makes you feel dirty. When you tell me a guy who soiled the uncaring organization with charges of despicable abuse against a woman and a child is good for chemistry, I'll tell you that chemistry is what losers worry about. Chemistry in the clubhouse. You know what? When you move the batter's box and the pitcher's mound into the clubhouse, then I'll listen. That's when chemistry matters. A year ago, Major League Baseball notified Clevenger that it wouldn't impose discipline after investigating the allegations of domestic and child abuse. Here's Getz. I certainly don't want to be dismissive of events that involve domestic violence by any stretch. You've got to trust the people leading the investigations. Well, Mr. Getz, you are dismissive of abuse simply by backing this guy. And the worst stance you can take after standing by Clevenger is standing by an investigation by an office working for a commissioner who couldn't punish any Astros for cheating their way to a World Series. How much more lame of an investigative branch do you need to see? So the White Sox signed this guy who has agreed to therapeutic programs for substance and acting like a decent person in a long-running bid to become as unlikable as possible. That's the way the White Sox roll. And the chairman wants $1 million from the public. Chicago White Sox, finding new ways to make you hate them. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. After a break, we will talk NCAA. We will talk Drake May, the guy the Bears general manager wouldn't go watch work out. We'll talk stuff with Chris Childers. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's Saturday Suckage on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
How come all those places that stepped up to offer the Bears, like Waukegan and Aurora and Cicero, why don't they step up and offer the White Sox a place to go? Yeah, apparently they got money for stadiums. Yeah, here, take the White Sox. Please, we'll pay you. Mike Clevenger passed the physical. Chris Getz failed the mental. That's what I said before the break. Here's what I mean. The South Side gets more despicable. Sucking on the field isn't enough. Sucking in the front office and the chairman's suite isn't enough. Sucking in the public square, aha, by signing a guy accused of domestic and child abuse, apparently hits for the cycle when it comes to hating your fans and showing what frauds you all are. Chris Getz refused to call this high school roster a rebuild. So he's lying or stupid, take your pick. And now, here's Getz on signing a guy that just makes you feel dirty talking about it. Quote, I've yet to meet anyone in Major League Baseball that is comfortable with their starting pitching and starting pitching depth. It's very early in the season. There's going to be, to keep us in a position to compete throughout the year. I guess he said that with a straight face. Continue, quote, having the comfort level of having guys step up and fill innings at a high level that pushed us towards bringing in arms like Clev and Keller, others. Okay, nobody in baseball is happy with their depth. All right, I'll buy that. Yet nobody else in baseball signed this guy who makes you feel dirty. When you tell me a guy who soiled the uncaring organization with charges of despicable abuse against a woman and a child is good for chemistry, I'll tell you that chemistry is what losers worry about. Chemistry in the clubhouse. You know what? When you move the batter's box and the pitcher's mound into the clubhouse, then I'll listen. That's when chemistry matters. A year ago, Major League Baseball notified Clevenger that it wouldn't impose discipline after investigating the allegations of domestic and child abuse. Here's Getz. I certainly don't want to be dismissive of events that involve domestic violence by any stretch. You've got to trust the people leading the investigations. Well, Mr. Getz, you are dismissive of abuse simply by backing this guy. And the worst stance you can take after standing by Clevenger is standing by an investigation by an office working for a commissioner who couldn't punish any Astros for cheating their way to a World Series. How much more lame of an investigative branch do you need to see? So the White Sox signed this guy who has agreed to therapeutic programs for substance and acting like a decent person in a long-running bid to become as unlikable as possible. That's the way the White Sox roll. And the chairman wants $1 million from the public. Chicago White Sox, finding new ways to make you hate them. I'm Steve Rosenblum. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. After a break, we will talk NCAA. We will talk Drake May, the guy the Bears general manager wouldn't go watch work out. We'll talk stuff with Chris Childers. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.